My name is Joe, and I'm an alcoholic. Ring the bell in about 5 minutes, Joe, because once I start rolling, you know, I don't want to stop. Excuse me. First of all, I'd like to thank God, you know, for allowing me to be here, and thank Don for inviting me, and the group for having me here. And for footnote on that, God, when I came in here, I was disconnected from God, and you guys took care of that, and you know, me up with God again, and for that I'm extremely grateful. Excuse me. My story has to deal with part with the religion, my drunk a lot. So if there's any Catholics here, please don't be offended. This is my own story. And you don't have to raise up your hand if you're Catholic, and we know all that's what's going on right now. So. But I'm a recovering Catholic again, too. This is what happened to me, my personal story. What happened was that when I was growing up, I had a lot of complexes, inferiority complexes that I had. To the max. And came in, and my father always wanted the best for me. So he sent me to a Catholic school. And at this school, we had to go to Mass every morning before we went to school. And way back, the Mass was said in Latin. So in my little rebellious mind, when I went there, I says, how the hell they want me to believe in this man? I don't even know what the hell he's talking about. I was having a lot of problems with English, too. So, and then they throw Latin on top of it. I said, Jesus, you know. So, but I wouldn't dare say anything, you know. When I was growing up, you don't say nothing. You just follow the line of cars and don't say anything. You don't have to ask questions, just do what you're told. So, but I did observe this, that when Mass was going on, there was some type of communication going on with the priest and the altar boy. And I said, huh, that's what I need to do. Become an altar boy, I know what he's talking about. And I did. Before my 8th year, I became an altar boy. And I was always looking for people to be accepted, always trying to please everybody, you know, even though sometimes there was resentment afterwards for certain things, but I always wanted to please everybody. And when they gave me this, when I was given this opportunity to become an altar boy, and they told me what this entailed and all that, I got really excited about this. I always craved to belong to something, and this gave me the opportunity to be somebody. And I loved it. And I did the very best I could. I mean, I was there in the morning, early in the morning, before I went to school, checked out, made sure. It wasn't on my bed. I was in charge, but I wanted to be in charge of the thing, you know. Make sure that everything was in line, everything was perfect. And then after school, we get off at 3:00. I wouldn't go straight home. If all the kids would go home, I would come back and see everything was in line, and nothing was offbeat there, so everything was ready for the evening or the following morning. And so the priest took notice of this, that I was very active. So one day he called me and said, Joe, come here. My mind right was, oh, what did I do wrong, you know? I must have done something wrong, because that's the only time when they call me for something. So I go over and I say, yes, Father, he says, you know, I've been watching you, and so have the other priests, and you're a very responsible young man. I said, well, Father, I'll try to do the best I can. I'm very pleased with what you're doing. And he says, come here. So he takes me down to the basement, and he hands me the key. He says, here's the key to that room. Open it up. So I open it up, and he says, you are going to be in charge of the wine. I said, okay. And I opened the door, and cases of this wonderful wine there. My mouth still waters. Ironic that I started with wine, I ended up with wine. And so I said, you're in charge. I said, okay, you're supposed to have two bottles out there in the back of the altar. And make sure that there's always wine there. No problem. So I did my duties, and then one day after I don't know how many months, I used to see a bottle, and I said, and then I could remember that wherever booze was around, like where I come from, if it doesn't show, I'm from, you're looking at genuine Tex-Mex, where I come from, we use booze for everything. I mean, when our families died, they used to die, we had wakes for 3 days. We bring the body over in the morning, and we had them there all day, and people come in, and there was a big party. We had lots to eat and a lot of drinking. And I noticed that people, grown-ups, you know, they get in little bunches there and they start joking. They forgot about that guy there or a person. And they were joking around and everybody's happy, you know, and they pass this bottle around, you know. And I couldn't wait to be there with that group, you know, because I see how happy they got. And being that I was so miserable, I wanted some of that. So there was a lot of association with booze and you know, having a good time and all that stuff. I remember the priest, you know, after Mass, he was all rosy cheeked and happy, and boy, I said, man, is this something with wine or with booze? So one day, after everybody left, I was by myself. So I said, well, I'm going to take a little drink of that stuff. Cracked one of the brand new bottles, and I hated it. And when it went down, boy, it felt like a cat was going the opposite way, scratching all the way. But when it hit bottom, it was just like an explosion. Boom! And something happened. Just something happened. I don't know what happened, but it was just different. Something changed in my life just like that. And man, this stuff is good. So I said, well, if one drink did that, you know, maybe another be better, you know. So I don't know how many drinks I had there that day. When I went home, I wasn't feeling no pain. I forgot I was so embarrassed. I was always embarrassed of talking to people or girls or grown-ups. I felt awkward anywhere I went. All of a sudden, I'm walking down to my house, and I feel good. I'm not looking at people to see. When people stared at me a little bit, I said, oh, what's wrong? Something must be wrong. I must be wearing something off. You know, the mind, crazy. All of a sudden, I didn't give a damn. You know, I'm just walking. Went home, and boy, I just loved it. I went to bed and said, the miracle. I only found something that when those guys are having such a great time. And this. So, what happened is that I started to every afternoon, you know, and then that wasn't enough. I used to bring a little one of the peanut butter jars from home, and before I went, I filled my peanut butter jar, and then I was borrow some. I was going to say I borrowed some wafers, hosts. They weren't blessed. If you're some Catholic kids, don't worry about it. They weren't blessed. So I put some in my pocket, and I go home. Where I come from in southern Texas, we have a lot of mesquite trees. And behind the house, a big, huge mesquite tree. So here I got the wine, I got the host, and I've already learned about Latin because I had to learn to become an altar boy. So I decided, well, I'm going to say Mass over here. So under this mesquite tree, I got a towel, I tied it around, got a whole door, and I put it as an altar. And I got all the kids. I invited all the kids to come over. They said, we're going to have Mass. I'm going to give you guys communion. I said, okay. So I had all the kids there from the barrio. You know? And at the time, the priest was the only one that drank. Now they pass the jug around, but way back, I mean, just the priest drank. So I said my thing there. I knew all the words and blah, blah, blah. And then I gave him the hose, and then I drank the wine. So every night when I went to sleep, I was relaxed. I felt good. You know, I just, the miracle of it. You know, God had provided for me what I was looking for. The answer for me, for being so awkward. So, but the thing is that, what happened is that it relaxed me so much, and I felt so good, and pretty soon I didn't care what you thought about me, and if I got out of hand, I didn't give a damn, you know, that's your problem. Besides, you know, and then I started getting a little cocky, but what happened was that the following day, I felt bad about what I'd done, you know. Am I going to face these people or whatever, you know. The remorse set in. But then I noticed that if I drink just a little bit more than what I was drinking, all of those feelings would go away. You say, man, this is really something. You know, I can mess up and then I put a little more liquid and then everything goes away. Till the liquid, the effect went away, and then I started feeling bad again. Then I had, you know, so it just snowballed. When I was 11 years of age, I told my dad, I said, I've got to become a man. And there's no way I'm going to become a man here at the house. I got to hit the road. I got to see the world. Because I'm going to go in the service, and there's no way I'm going to make it in the service if I don't know the world and know what it's all about. And my dad begged me and my mom too, and I'm gone. So I left. I was the oldest of six, the first boy. My mom had me spoiled. You know, she would fix dinner for everybody, and I didn't like it. I said, I'm not going to eat that. So she would prepare me a different meal. All of a sudden, I'm hitting the road. I'm in Texas, southern Texas, and I'm going to Michigan on a truck. At that time, way back in the 40s, it used to take just about a week driving from southern Texas all the way to Michigan. I'm in the back of the truck, nobody. All of a sudden, I'm hungry and there's nobody to feed me. What a wake-up call, man. I'll tell you, there were nights when I was on the road that I cried myself to sleep. But I wasn't going to go back. You know. Here, I'm going to go all the way. I learned pretty soon that I could go in a store and buy cans, and boy, thank God for those cans, because I, you know, that was my life. I went up in Michigan. I continued. Everything went from better, if they were better, to worse. And one day I used to live close to a place called, I think CAPAC, but the port between the United States and Canada is Port Huron in Michigan. But one day we got drunk, a bunch of young kids, you know. We got drunk and we decided to go to Canada. And we out there and we raced hell in Canada. And I don't even know what kind of border they have there. I don't remember. I was drunk going, and sure that I was drunk coming back. And they escorted, well, I remember they escorted us. This guy, this cop was driving a car and he had us in front of us. We walked. And they told us, don't you ever come back to Canada. I said, okay. Fine. Who in the hell wants you? So I got back, you know, and just progressed this thing. I got a job picking cucumbers. A hell of a job. It was rough on my back. Then I got it from there. I went to a packing house. And I graduated. I'm making big bucks now. And now I'm being accepted by these older people. 20, 30, 40-year guys I just started hanging out with. Because I could provide the money to buy booze, and I was part of the gang. And boy, I just felt like a big shot. And one thing led to another. Pretty soon, I didn't have a place to go out there. I mean, I was a lot of places. And then I went back to, I said, well, hell, I went back home in Texas. And I hung around there, and I think this progressed. Where I come from, Mexico is 7 miles away. So you drive straight across 7 miles, you're in the center of the river. And out there you can drink all night long. And if you were if you're 6 months old, you can bring a bottle back if you can. You know, it was valid at the time. And so, man, it was just party. One thing got to another one, you know, it just got worse and worse. And finally, I said, well, this is not working. I held a school, and I said, I'm going to service. I told my dad, I said, I got to go on. It's time for me to go. I went, and I wanted to go into the Marines. They wouldn't have me. I went to everybody. Nobody would have me. By that time, I've developed this frame of mind that when I want things now done, I want it now. You know, I don't want to wait around. You got to wait. That's bull. You want me? You want a good man? You get him now, or else. Sayonara. So I went up in the Air Force. I signed up for 4 years, and I went in there, and because people have told me, once you get in the service, you really become a man. You really develop, you know, that's what I wanted. I always wanted to become a man. I didn't know what the hell a man was, but I wanted to be one. So I go in the service 4 years. I was in Korea and Japan and whatever. And I couldn't even finish my 4 years. I had developed this attitude, and I got kicked out of service. Kicked me out here. I was kicked out in Travis Air Force Base. I got out of there, and I called my uncle. I went on a 3-day drunk in Hayward. Never been to Hayward since the 50s. I was there in service a couple of weeks ago. Never been to Hayward. But I remember I went on a 3-day drunk there and called my uncle, lived in San Jose. He says, well, come on over. I said, hell, I don't even know where San Jose is then. He said, well, I'll go pick you up. So he went and picked me up and says, you can stay here. That's how you can live there. And here's a car. You can, this will be your car. I said, jeez. I'm in heaven now, and I love San Jose. In the 50s, I loved it. I says, this is my town. I'm going to live and die here. 9 months later, they put me on a Greyhound with a one-way ticket to Texas. Just get the hell out of here, and don't you ever come back. So here I go back to Texas. Then somebody says, the only way you're going to settle down is that you got to get married. When a person gets married, he settles down. He only has a home. Okay. Then you really become a man. Fine, let's get with it. So I found this poor lady, young girl, beautiful lady. And she was allergic to alcohol. And boy, I tell you, had a rough time. Pretty soon she became immune to it, hanging out with me. So anyway, we got married. She took, I was a very sick puppy by then. The day we got married, we had a big wedding. In Texas, we do things big. Big wedding, and so after the wedding, I had a station wagon that had given me. And I put all the gifts, we're trying to put all the gifts in there because we were going to stay in this motel until I got an apartment. And so we got this, I was getting all the gifts, and somebody hollered. Well, we getting ready to go. Somebody hollered, a bunch, some other guys, drinking buddies, cousins or whatever. He says, well, can you go out and have a drink? Or are you going to be bossed by your wife? Man, that ego was already humongous by then. No way. I'm ready in about 5 minutes. I'm just going to drop her off and that's it. I did that. The guys came home and picked me up. We went on drunk. I don't know how many days I was gone. The poor girl was in the room. We had a refrigerator and everything. But nothing there. Nothing but water and cake that was left over from the wedding. And I'm at least 2 days I was gone on a drunk. When I came back, that girl was... Now, I never touched it. Mind you, this is how sick I was. She was a virgin. I never touched her. I'd rather go drinking with the boys than spend the night, my wedding night. And I came back maybe 2 days. I don't know how many days, but at least 2 days I was gone. And she was crying. And by that time, who I was hanging out with, that attitude, you got to show them who's the boss. Once you can't show them that you're weak because then, that's all she wrote. You got to show them, so you got to really put the... Squeeze and all, who I hang out with, you know, sick people. So she started just crying and came out, dog crying. I raised all kinds of hell there, trying to shut her up. Even when I was going through it, I felt bad about it. I really felt guilty. One that was coming down from a hangover, I didn't know how many, I was in a blackout, I don't know how many they were gone. And then I felt bad about her that, you know, here's the first time she got married, and here's that. Knew that once I started drinking, I forget about those feelings, and so it just went on. She took that garbage for 19 years, that poor lady. We had four kids. And one day, after close to the night, well, she kicked me out many times. Kicked me out, and I would come back. And I knew if I came back for one night, I was good for 6 months or a year. I knew that. All kinds of excuses. Well, I came after my uniforms, or I came after my other boots, or whatever. Something. Just an excuse to come home after I got tired of partying around out there. Finally, one day, she says, "You're out of here." But, no buts. Get out of here because I'm calling the cops. And I walked out of there. I had a T-Bird and a pickup, brand new pickup. Walked out of there. Within a year's time, both the big car and the pickup were gone. Pickup, I sideswiped five cars and just total everything. All I had was a job left. I was staying here and there. I had a lot of things going on, but no place to stay, to speak up. The last thing that an alcoholic like me dropped is a job. Remember that I was never fired. And the guys, I was off days, you know. The last time before I left the job, because I was never fired, the superintendent came over to Joe and said, "I'm tired of firing the union people." He says, "Here's the secretary just showed me this thing." He says, "You've been off going to a funeral 16 times. For your grandfather, how many grandfathers do you have? And then," he said, "you got X amount. You've been off because they pull a tooth 98 times. How many tooths you have?" You know, lies. I forgot about lies, you know. I used to go to the barn, and they used to have this drink they used to call Café Royale. And then the guy would give me those drinks because they knew once I had two drinks, I wouldn't stop. I have a job, I don't give them. They would give me the first drink. So, and then they would, the guy would have me walk to the phone and says, "Joe, what are we going to tell them today?" They knew. They would lie to me, the company. So anyway, that went on. Till finally, I couldn't work anymore. After I lost my car, I couldn't work anymore. And I used to go just for the hell and drive around Skid Row so I could feel better than they were. And I used to say, "I don't have any problems. I can stop anytime I want to. They have problems." Or I used to see guys, winos out there, they got problems. Lo and behold, after I lost everything, I went up there. Eating out of garbage cans at the last. No hope. I didn't take a bath. Tell people that when I walked down the sidewalk, people went around me. I projected a lot of anger. But I was angry. I didn't know who, but I was angry. I was mad. Anybody, I just jumped on their case. I didn't know nothing, what was going on. I just projected a lot of anger. I don't know, as I tell my sponsors, I don't know if that was the anger or because I smelled, because I didn't take a bath for so long. I don't know. Maybe it's a combination of both. So, I was out there, and the only time I washed my clothes, it was in a pond in a park. I used to go out there and just rinse my clothes off and put them back on. I had things to do, place to go, and people to see. You know, I was on the move. And so that was the way I lived. in and out of jail. Just in and out of jail. I get out many times. I was kicked out of jail at 5:30, 5, 6 o'clock, kick out, different times kick out. And I was kicked out, and that afternoon by 5 o'clock, I was there back. Same hole I've been out of it. Because I got out, and the guy said, "Hey, Joe, where have you been?" They had me, you know, "Oh, you need a drink?" "Oh, yeah, I need a drink." I didn't even go eat. I just went back to a bar. And because I had so much anger, later I found out with me, I took it out on people. And I got into a hassle, and I got stabbed, and I stabbed. And went. I went up back in jail many a time. It was my routine, in and out of jail, you know, and out there, roaming the streets. And I remember the weekends. It was so hard for me, especially on Sundays, because I remember my mother and family used to get together and have a lunch, you know, the whole family and everything. When I was there walking the streets, and I'd be walking, sometimes be walking the barrios, and I'd hear kids cry and wife and husband holler and everything. And I was there, I just hope that, I wish they would just allow me to sit on the steps. Not be part of them. I just want to be close to a family. You know, even, I don't care what they're doing. I just want to be part of. I felt so lonely out there in the streets. And mainly in the jail. And when I got there, nowhere to go. And I just felt, especially weekends, it tear me up. But I didn't know what the heck to do. In our jail, finally, I got arrested one more time, and I was told that just that I go to AA. Came to AA, and a lot of good things were told me at the time. This group were very good with newcomers. They gave you nothing. That meeting was dedicated to a newcomer, and they gave you nothing but information. All kinds of information. Boy, they gave me all. When I left there, I was floating. I didn't know what the hell they told me. And damn. And then they keep coming back. But nobody wanted nothing to do with me. Even my mom, at the end, didn't want nothing to do with me. Because that's the way I acted. And here's this guy, don't know me. Men and women keep coming back. And then I came back a couple of times, and then one dare say, "We need you." That really hit bottom. That really hit me. That made a hell of an impression. "We need you." And nobody has said that in a long time. And it felt good. They only knew what I've been through, what I've done, the people I've hurt. They wouldn't give me the time of the day. You guys did. And I was accepted. And man, that's the first time I've ever been. I haven't felt that way in a long time. Really good feelings about this. I didn't stay. This man was saying that he's been in and out. I went back out. I went back out simply because I didn't do what I was suggested. Go to a lot of meetings, get phone numbers from people in the program, get the big book. If you don't have it, steal it, pay it later. And the 12 and 12. Everything, and get a sponsor. Everything that was suggested to me, I did not do. Because I said, geez, I mean, you know, here I come from the streets, don't have a damn thing. And it's 90 minutes, 90 days. Bullshit, what do you mean 90 minutes, 90 days? What the hell do you want so many meetings for? Hey, you know, I've got it up there. I can, you know, just tell me how. I remember this guy, he smiled at me. I've never met him. He looked across, boy, he just, and I was kind of hiding from this guy, and this guy just, "Hi, damn, who the hell that guy is?" He, you know, and I didn't want to face him. As soon as the meeting was, he comes over. "How you been? What's your name?" Shit, about 90 meetings in 90 days. Man, that's too many meetings. I don't have to go to that many meetings. Keep coming back to him. "Man, you guys might be sick because I don't eat that many meetings." And so I did not do. I didn't get what it was. I just got to tell you, I didn't do. And a person doesn't follow the guidelines, especially the aspect of the spiritual, is bound to drink again. No ifs or buts about it. And I went back out. I went back out, found myself drinking in a bar. I got into a hassle. I got We stabbed each other, this guy and I. I don't know what happened to the guy. I've never seen him since. They're going to send me to Vacaville. Now, in Vacaville is a place for guys like me that keep on doing the same thing over and over again. Special place. Got to be sick. Got to be insane. Well, that's where they were going to send me. Thank God there were some people in the program that cared more about this wino than I did. So they rescued me and they got me back and just with it. But I told this guy, the last time I was in jail, I said, I will not drink again. I made my firm commitment. I'm not going to drink again. Whatever the hell they tell me in AA, I'm going to do. No questions, no ifs or buts about it. Whatever they tell me, I will do. That's what I told this guy. He didn't know what the hell I was talking about. I'm going back away, and then that few days I was there, I'm really sick. There's no way one person, talking about sponsorship. I don't want to miss the boat. So I went out there, and I got me 3 sponsors. I don't want to miss the boat. I never did play him again. I never did, but I did use him. And all it seemed like they all were talking the same language. You got a lot of meetings. You got to work the steps. Hang out with people that are in the program. Cut those relationships out there. You ain't got no business with them people. Hang out with the winners. And all talking the same lingo. And then one of them say after a few days, I don't know, do you have a God? I said, anything, I'll do anything. I'll sweep the floor. I'll wash dishes because we don't have paper cups. We used to have the glass stuff, I'll do anything. But that God bullshit, I don't want to part of it. He said, well, I got news for you, buddy. If you don't get a higher power, you will drink again. What that has to do, what the God has to do with my drinking, A lot. That's the main thing. And man, it was a war because I've been brought up in this religious environment and I hated it. I hated everything. There was organized religion. I didn't want a part of it. That's why I got loose. I used to go to meetings when they, if they got too spiritual on me, I'd throw a book at him, I'd walk out cussing up a storm. I didn't want no part of this. Finally, and the guy, my sponsor, one of them told me, he said, if you don't get out, you will drink again, Joe. I said, I don't want to drink. He said, well, you better get with it. So how in the hell do you get it? He says, I cannot give you mine. You cannot buy one from Charlie. You got to get your own. And you better search it. I'm not going to tell you how. That's your job. Man, so I go to meetings and I say, my sponsor in my case, he wants me to get a higher power. I don't know what the hell, how to do it, or who in the hell, And he's on my case every day, that guy called. So one day, I was in a meeting, and this guy called me from Arizona, old Indian guy, called me. Joe, come here. I had the same problem you had. And they say, if you got something, tell it. Somebody will come up with a solution. He says, I said, what'd you do? He says, I don't know if it's going to work for you. But I did. I faked it, and I faked it till I made it. Fake, like there's a God. I don't know if it's going to work for you. I hope it does. And then I'll try everything. Not because I want to buy God. I want to get real. I want to get my sponsor on my back. I'll try it. How much time do we got? I don't know if it's going to, but I just, that guy, I can't stand him anymore. So I started working at that. I used to get up in the morning and I used to holler, if you're there, if there's such a thing, let me know. Show me anything. I don't give a damn anything. And every morning I got there. And one side of me, that's bullshit. One side of my mind would say, that's bullshit. And the other side, my sponsor's voice, you better get with it, or you will drink again. So, man, that's a war, Damn, but I don't want to drink again. I don't want to go to prison because, I was going to go to back of meal, That's so every morning. And I don't know how long it took. One morning, I said, God, I can explain to you. the feeling that came. There were no lights or nothing. Just something came inside of me. It was different. And I said, so this is what it's all about. I felt like I've never felt before. And I said, and I got on my knees. I said, thank you. They hooked me up with God again. And for that, I'm extremely grateful. If I haven't learned anything else in A, that experience is worth being here. I had a son, because when I was out there messing around, you know, I had a son on the side. He's a half-breed. He's a Mono Indian. And that man, that young man, I remember when he was a baby, I always neglected. I didn't want no part of him. The mother says, what do you want me to say? I said, tell him I came from Mexico and I went back and somebody killed me over there. Bottom line, I didn't want to pay child support. That's what I was doing. So I ignored this kid. For a long time, he lived his life, I lived mine. He grew up. And lo and behold, this kid, they moved over, without knowing, moved over to close to where my dad lived. And this kid used to come over to my dad. My dad, he lived to be 97 years of age. And every afternoon, he would go out, he put a table out there in the afternoon when the kid came out, got out of school. He put a big, huge table out there underneath the tree, and he had sodas and cookies for the kids. Whoever kid that came by, hey, you want some cookies? Yeah. So he served all the kids. Every day he did that. Well, this kid was a neighbor by then. He came over. And he started, he didn't know it was his grandfather. And they started, on this kid's home, my dad asked him, what's your name? He says, my name is Joe Caceres. So my dad, you know, he says, uh-oh. And then he's seen it, this kid. And he asked me, what about, well, they say, well, that's it. He's my grandson. That's our blood. Well, he grew up always didn't want no part of it, not of him. Life, and remember, I don't know how many years ago, he was already grown up. He got married. My dad says, would you like to meet your son? First he asked his son, what about your dad? He said, my dad, he was from Mexico, and the same story I told the lady. They killed him out there. Oh. By this time he's already 19 years old. Dad is still alive. How do you know? I mean, he never told me. He said, I didn't want to harm you when you were growing up. I didn't know how you were going to take, but now you're a young man. You can make. I didn't want to hurt you. Okay, so I remember one day, we all used to go for Christmas caroling. We used to go to, my dad used to live out of Fresno. Every Christmas, we used to go there. And then we take all the kids. I'd go out there with the kids. And we'd go caroling to, convalescent homes and hospitals. We'd take all the kids, you know. And then one day, one Christmas Eve, my dad says, you coming over? I said, yeah, we'll be over there. To meet your son. We got there after a while. He told my son, be there a certain hour. We've been friends ever since. Become real good friends. Called me up and asked me for advice. The last time I was supposed to be here, and I couldn't make it because he was graduating from college. Doing real good. And he knows, he always tells me, whenever you go to an AA meeting, and he talks to you, because I tell him, this is my new family. AA is my family. You know, got brothers and sisters in the program. A whole bunch of them. We got 196,000 groups in California and Canada. And I said, I got brothers and sisters all over the world. Well, he always says, with this I want to end. He always says, and I hope I can. When you go see your brothers and sisters, they have given me a dad, a father. And I say to you, thank you, because you have given me a son. For that I'm grateful. You guys have been patient enough to guide me through all this ordeal my life is. But now I'm really enjoying the fruits of it. Oh, going back to the service. I love talking a little bit about service. When I really got into it, when I fell really in love with this program, you know, after, I don't know how long it was. I was so, by 6 months, I was not so happy. I walked into the meeting, my group, and I said, and nobody says anything. You know, Joe, you get 6 months, you know, hey, God. Nobody said a damn thing, you know. I'm busting, you know. Finally, after the meeting, my sponsor says, well, I told him, hey, you know, I haven't had a drink. What I mean, nothing else. 6 months. I've never been, since I was 11 years old, I've never been there out of a booth that long. And he said, Joe, any dummy can stop drinking. That's the way he used to bring me down. Any dummy can stop drinking. This is a program to enjoy life. This is where you learn how to live without drinking. Within the next day or 2 days, he had me secretary in the meeting. Now, he says, I'm not going to mess around with you anymore. You either get in service, or I haven't got time for you. Anyway, after that, I felt so good. So I went to a jail. I didn't know about H&I. I went to a jail. I knew that there was people there that were there when I was there, in and out. And I had to let them know what has happened in my life. So I go in there and I go to the county jail, and the sergeant knew me by first name, you know. He walked, hey, Joe, I haven't seen you in a long time. Said, the reason why, because of Final Solution. I said, behind those walls, there's people like me. And I want to tell them what I found. I don't know how in the hell you're going to do it, but you get me in there. And he got me, took some prints, got me a picture. And then every weekend I used to go in there. Or any day I'm there, good, I was there. People used to say, on Sundays, I says, the disease doesn't wait for anybody. And because there's people there, they're probably going to get kicked out and don't know there's a solution. They don't know there's another way of living that will then prevent them from getting back into the same hole. And this is my responsibility. Whether they do it, that's their business. I have to tell them. So I was out there. I was gone. Sometimes I would talk to people, face to face. Like sometimes there had to be a wall there. Sometimes a phone, depending on what type of criminal. So that's what I did. In 1980, I moved to Sacramento. I had my sponsor out there, and so I used to tell him, I used to go, hi, well, this is going on, you know, you're always asking the sponsor about this, or you're going through some turmoil, whatever. I was a lot of turmoil, especially with relationships. And wait a minute, I'm available here on the phone, but you move to Sacramento, you get a sponsor in Sacramento. I can't translate it, but I'm going to try and say it. There's an old Mexican saying that amor de pendejos, amor de lejos, amor de pendejos, which is, you know, more or less love from afar, love from a dummy. There can't be any love if it's a long distance love. The love has got to be right there. And that's what he's trying to tell me about getting a sponsor, local sponsor. Somebody, you've got to have somebody. So in 1980, I came over, and I got to give me a sponsor. I got me a sponsor. Lord and behold, this guy was in H&I. It's been in 1919, 1957. So I says, well, what are you doing? I said, well, I don't know. I says, I was going to the jails over there, and man, I feel good about going. You know, I want to go in this county jail. He said, hey, wait a minute. We have a committee here. Oh. We have a committee here. We're organized. We'll come in. So I started. So I've been involved in that job for around 22 years. I love it. And I've been involved with a lot of other things, believe me. I've been jail service. I've been involved with a lot of things. Conferences, you name it. The last service that I would drop was H&I. That was the last. That would be the last thing. And I always say that because it's my responsibility. I can go to any meeting. I can go to China to a meeting if I have the money. But those guys cannot go. And I found so many experiences that keep me sober. I tell them, I don't come over here to teach you, or I come here for my own. And believe me, I've heard so many experiences. There's this guy that used to be involved in H&I. He should be right now celebrating 32 years of sobriety. He's got 11 years in prison right now. He's a lifer. Hell of an experience. He says, you know what, Joe, what I did? I stopped serving. That's the first thing I did. I dropped the service. And then I stopped going to meetings. First, I started 3 meetings a week, then 2 meetings a week, then 1 meeting a week, and then all of a sudden, I go every 2 weeks. He didn't tell me what he did, but he's there for life. It means if I don't continue to do something, I may wind up there. Thank God that right now we're going into San Quentin. I have a lot of good experience out here in Vacaville, and I've been in Folsom, in and out. If you're fairly new, don't wait till you get with it now. Get involved. It's very important that you get involved. Especially prejudices, H&I. I say, I've fallen in love 3 times in my life. First with AA because I found a way. Fell in love with AA. That's why I was out there trying to bring the dogs into the meetings. And secondly, with H&I. And third, with jail and service. So I fall in love 3 times in AA. I feel great and I love it.